the beginning.
It's the Sports Final Podcast. Hi, everybody. I'm John Chandler from NBC New York in our 30 Rock Studios. Glad to have you aboard here on episode number one. Now, what are we going to talk about? Megan Duggan will not stop in her quest for Olympic gold, but USA Hockey found her to be just as relentless in a fight for equal rights. It's beyond hockey. It has larger implications, and the captain talks to us about her push for change. Oh, and about that unfinished business with Canada.
We've come up short in the last two Olympics. It's no secret that's what we want.
I screwed up.
Yeah, Joe, you did screw up. But the Yankees didn't roll over because of their manager. They moved past that Game 2 slip-up, and we'll talk about a lineup that looks like it's stacked for October's to come.
Now it's Beckham who's down.
Odell Beckham's season is done, and it looks like the Giants is too. Who's to blame?
All right, another tough ball game.
As always, there is so much to talk about in the New York sports scene alone here, and we'll do that on this podcast. Also, for the next 4 months, we want to give you a crash course for the Winter Olympics. We want to get you ready for February. We have crammed out all of this so that you don't have to, so you can thank us later. We want to introduce you to the athletes to watch in South Korea come February. Also, we want to give you an idea of who they are away from the slope, so the ice, so the field. What makes them tick? What are their personalities like? You'll find that out here as we go one-on-one with some of the top performers in their respective sports. We're not talking about just names in bold appearing in a summary of the day come February. Nope, we want you to identify with them. So we're going to strive to learn the things that they didn't even know you needed to know. Like today's guest, Megan Duggan, captain of USA Hockey.
Hello?
Hey, is this Megan?
Yeah, this is Megan.
Shoots!
Megan Duggan led USA Hockey to a fourth consecutive world championship. 3-2 was the final over Canada in the championship game, and it was a dandy to watch. Duggan also helped lead the USA women's hockey team in a battle for equal pay.
Where are you joining us from right now? You guys are training down in Florida, right?
I am, yes. I'm calling in from my apartment down here in Wesley Chapel, Florida. So pretty just outside Tampa.
That's going to be home for the next few months as you guys get ready for the 2018 games in South Korea. What is every day like for you now from this point on? It is full hockey from the moment you wake up, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much always like that. I mean, everyone always says, oh, are you gearing up for the Olympics? You know, how's training going? And it's, as an Olympic athlete, it's not just every 4 years. It's pretty much every single day. So there's a lot of work that gets put in between Olympic games, but certainly it ramps up a little bit during this time frame. So for us, it's honestly eat, sleep, and breathe hockey. I mean, we're up every day over at the rink, on ice training, off ice training, you name it, and then you come home, you eat, you sleep, and go back the next day for the same thing.
So what's a practice like at this point? I mean, with less than 6 months to go, is it intense?
Yeah, I mean, like every practice is different. There's always a certain thing that you're working on, and as elite athletes, obviously recovery days are just as important, so they can't get out there and just run you into the ground every single day. But each practice has a certain skill set or a certain goal we're trying to achieve, and you just stay dialed in for the time you're on the ice and trying to get better, and pretty much do the best you can for that time frame, and then go back out the next day and do the same thing.
Megan, I would think the year that you guys just had kind of serves to energize this team too. I mean, that has to help to build off of winning worlds, and then the push that you guys had for equality this year with the men's team, that has to, I would think, energize this team going into the Olympics.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, at this point, you shouldn't need an extra energy boost, I don't think, when you're training for a gold medal and what we're trying to achieve. But yeah, I mean, you nailed it on the head. Like it provided so much extra, motivation and momentum and energy for us going into the World Championships, coming off the heels of that battle against USA Hockey. But I think it definitely brought our team closer and really showed us what we are made of kind of during the tough times and, how we can rally together and get things done. So I think those are crucial things that we'll definitely draw from in the next 6 months.
Have you had a moment to step back and think about what you have done, not just for women's hockey, but I think women in general in a push for being on an equal playing field as men?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that was a very, very emotional and very real time frame that we were going through. And I think with how passionate we were about it, myself certainly being one of the players that was leading the charge, I mean, I was reminded every single day of what we were trying to do. And I was so passionate about it, continually talking about it, whether it was with family or friends or teammates or, you know, news outlets. And, you know, every day when I would talk about it, and even now, my heart just kind of pounds. And I think about how important that is and how crucial that is to female athletes and like you mentioned, just women in general. So it's definitely, I mean, it's something we'll never forget. There's still, I think, in the world, I still think there's work to be done. But it was a crucial historic time period, I think, in women's sports. And I was certainly proud to be a part of it.
I mean, nationally, do you think the sport of women's hockey is growing? Can you see the effects of what you guys are doing?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I can see the effects. I just in the last, you know, 5 years or so, the visibility, I think, has gone up. I think people are asking questions and they want to see it. I think people think it's a fast, dynamic, physical game, and it is. You know, people tune in every 4 years, and last gold medal game, I don't even know how many million people, I think they said, watch the game. And it's, I mean, it's exciting, and it's a fun sport to watch and be a part of and to cheer for. And I know my teammates and myself really take it upon ourselves to definitely promote the game and raise the visibility of the game as much as we can. And I think it's gone a long way.
What do you like about your team going to the Olympics and coming out of winning a fourth straight World's Championship?
Yeah, everything, really. We have such a great combination of so many different skill sets. You know, we have a lot of veteran leadership and core, you know, experience returning, but, you know, some great young kids that bring a lot of fire and energy to the mix. I just think we're really skilled. We use everyone on the roster, and I think that's a huge strength of ours as well. But I love the culture of our team right now. I love the attitude in the locker room. I love, you know, the way people respect and respond to each other. I think that's so important going into a year like this, and it doesn't happen overnight. You know, we've been building and building and building. And, like I mentioned earlier, 6 months, we've got a long way to go and a lot of different things. And, I'm just, you know, excited for this season and, just really proud of where our team's at, but, excited about where we can go as well.
So I know, I mean, hockey is a very superstitious sport. I know you talk to a lot of guys in the NHL, and you know, if the Stanley Cup is around them, they won't touch it. They don't want to think about it until that moment that they've actually won it. I know when I went to Boston University, it was a similar thing with the beanpot. You don't talk about it. You don't think about it. You don't touch it if you're around it until you have actually won it. Do you allow yourself to think about that moment of winning gold that you've been so close to?
Yeah. I mean, I do, for sure. I think... you know, for us, I think it's, you have to, you know, imagine what you want. And I think that that's a big part. It's no secret. That's what we want.
Sure.
You know, it's not, we've come up short in the last two Olympics, and I think that's, everyone knows that. And we have a goal in mind. That goal is to win a gold medal in the next Olympics. And, I'll never shy away from imagining that or talking openly about it.
You got to keep it light in there. I've heard from some people. Correct me if I'm wrong here, but if they're around you, you have a tendency to just kind of belt out in song if something is playing. Is that true?
Yeah, I like to sing. I definitely like to sing. I've been put on the spot a few times.
I'm not going to do that to you.
Yeah, different media events. I mean, I love to sing in the locker room. Yeah,
okay.
I auditioned for The Voice a couple summers ago.
Did you really?
Yeah, I love to sing in the car and in the shower. And,
all right.
You know, with my family and friends and things like that. It's yes. It's fun.
I mean, I say this as someone who, like, mm-hmm. is not ashamed of the fact that if you roll up on me at a red light, it's a very good chance that I'm belting out a Katy Perry song.
That you're singing.
Like that.
Yeah,
like, seriously,
to, right?
I love
it.
No shame for that. That's fine.
Yeah.
Good for
you. Car singing is the best.
Oh,
good,
yeah.
Acoustics in there. You know,
absolutely.
You sound really good. And, yeah.
Absolutely. What are you singing? Anything?
Yeah, pretty much anything. For whatever reason, ever since I was younger, I'm always able to remember lyrics. So any song that comes on the radio, doesn't matter what station, I usually can sing it. I tend to, I guess if I was going to sing for people, or I usually pick a country song, something, whether it's Dixie Chicks or Sugarland or anything like that. But I really love to just sing whatever's on and whatever I'm in the mood for.
All right, very good. I'm not going to ask it. You're from Danvers, Mass. I'm not going to ask you Sox Yankees because I think we know how that goes.
Yeah.
But it's good to have a rivalry. It's good to have some life in that rivalry now, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a good rivalry. I love rivalries in sports. So, you know, I'm a big Sox fan, big Pats fan, Bruins fan. I'm a Boston girl at heart.
So you're used to winning.
Yeah, I like to win. I mean, all elite athletes are super competitive.
Exactly.
So, obviously, you know, winning's more fun.
Megan, thank you so much for your time. We wish you all the best.
No problem. I appreciate it.
All right. Go get that goal. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks.
Maybe next time we'll get a duet with Megan on some Katy Perry. Then again, I don't think the world needs to hear me singing Teenage Dream, even if it's at a stoplight. In fact, especially if it's at a stoplight around New York City. But what the world does need is to see U.S. and Canada in the gold medal game, and they are probably going to get that, barring some epic collapse. Hillary Knight, Doug, and Casey Bellamy, they're on the roster for the 11th time. Two silvers, seven world golds between them. That is incredible. 12 members from that 2014 Olympic team are on this year's USA Women's National Team, and they all know that the theme is redemption, unfinished business. They're looking to take care of it come February. They are going to be must-see TV, of course, here on NBC.
Lindor with a swing and a drive to right field. Judge back at the wall, reaches up and makes the catch.
Aaron Judge turned around the Yankees' playoff hopes with one catch. Greg Bird with one swing. Game 3 in the ALDS may be a window into what we're going to see in October's to come from this Yankees team.
He took it back!
How big of a lift was Aaron Judge's catch to rob that home run?
Oh, it was a great catch. It was huge. I mean, he's Bigfoot out there, so he didn't really have to jump. So, like I said, he plays a great defense, and for him to, make that catch, I'm at third base. You know, in my head, I'm like, get down, and Judge you to make that catch, that was a big play.
When it went up in the air, I just started going back, and I thought I had a little bit of room, but once I felt the wall, just gave it about a 6-inch jump, and was able to get it.
Did you know you had it the whole way?
Oh, yeah. Right off the bat, I kind of felt like it was going to stay in the park and had a good chance at it.
You know, here's the thing. This Yankees team could have been left for dead. Down 0-2 to the Indians. Joe Girardi splashed all over the back pages on Saturday. It was a really tough day for Joe.
I take responsibility for everything, and I feel horrible about it. Does it change the complexion of the game? Yeah, it sure could have.
And to be frank, he deserved it. He made a terrible decision not challenging the replay. We all know that. It cost them most likely game 2. Hindsight helps you look at that and helps you understand that. But I think even in the moment watching that game, I turned to someone who was like, well, they're just going to challenge it. And we kept watching and waiting for them to challenge. And when they didn't, oh man, you just kind of had a feeling disaster was going to strike. That said, they could have been very easily swept by the Indians coming in. They could have been a team that was deflated and ultimately defeated. And yet, they found a way to dig deep, to block out the noise, and to win. And I think that is what's so impressive about this Yankees team and why a lot of these players are so suited to play here and to handle the pressures here in New York. Masahiro Tanaka was amazing in that Game 3. I mean, I think it's worth discussing going forward about Tanaka and if he can be that kind of pitcher. Because if he can be that kind of pitcher and not the frustratingly inconsistent pitcher that he has been for the Yankees, man, they've got something. But that is the big question with Tanaka. And at least for a night, you saw that all come together. But then you see the rest of these contributors. Aaron Judge, okay, he wasn't doing it with his bat. But the catch that he made, robbing Francisco Lindor, as he just kind of reaches up and snags the ball. I love that Todd Frazier called him Bigfoot out there. And it does help having a power forward playing right field. But then Greg Bird coming up with that huge home run was such a spark for the Yankees and a sign that it's not all Aaron Judge. Though he is the MVP of this team, he is the Rookie of the Year and probably the MVP in baseball after a monstrous 52 home run breakout season. Let's not forget that this lineup looks loaded for the future. This is a Yankees team that's going to be an October regular. Now for some last impressions.
It's Carmelo Anthony knocks down the triple, his first points as a member of the Thunder.
Common theory was he would never want to play in Oklahoma City.
That's because nobody really knew me, but
the thought of playing and living in Oklahoma City, why was that okay for you?
I had to make a quick decision. But believe it or not, Oklahoma City was a team that me and my team talked about.
Carmelo Anthony traded to Oklahoma City. On any day, that would have been a massive lead story here in New York, but it followed on the heels of President Trump calling out Colin Kaepernick and then oddly calling out Steph Curry as well on Twitter, disinviting him from the White House. It really turned into kind of a bizarre, bizarre day. It was a Saturday, and also that day the Yankees happened to clinch. So you had three potential lead stories, and Trump versus Kaepernick and Steph Curry really kind of overshadowed everything. And I think it was also a sign of there was some fatigue with the whole Melo Knicks deal. I mean, I think everyone's reaction when they saw it, and I know it was certainly when I first heard that Melo was traded, it was like, okay, well, finally. I mean, this is what had to happen. I think all things considered, even though the Knicks got nothing really in return for a player as great as Carmelo, what they did get was a chance to turn the page and move forward now with Kristaps Porzingis.
Manning, oh, through the hands of Beckham. All the injuries the Giants have dealt with at wide receiver, and now it's Beckham who's down.
Well, there goes the Giants' season. I mean, can you recall a more devastating day than the Giants had in Week 5 against the Chargers? Just from an injury standpoint, losing three wide receivers for the season. Obviously, the big one is Odell Beckham, but Brandon Marshall going down for the season, you still had hopes that Marshall was going to somehow be able to reach back and at least channel the way that he played with the Jets down the stretch for the Giants and maybe help them turn the season around. It didn't happen, and it was a disappointment for this Brandon Marshall experiment this year. He just never got on the same page for whatever reason, whether that's age, whether it's just an inability to pick up the offense as quickly as they thought he would. It just didn't work out for Brandon Marshall. Obviously, losing Odell Beckham for the season, and who knows what his future holds beyond this as he now tries to recover from what appeared to be a devastating injury, that is a huge, huge question for the Giants.
I get paid to win, not merely compete. And right now we're 0-5. I'm my biggest critic. I look in the mirror, and I have to do a better job.
You go back to that Super Bowl talk in August, and you cringed when you heard it, but you didn't think the Giants were going to be this bad. And they are. And they have to fix this. And it's time to start wondering if McAdoo is the right coach. But I think the bigger issue is Jerry Reese the right GM for this team? He hasn't drafted well, he didn't address the offensive line, and that is proving to be an egregious mistake. I mean, it's amazing if you think about it. The Jets won three games before the Giants won one this season. I don't think anybody saw that coming. And finally, Terry Collins is done. Terry Collins, the man who led the Mets into the World Series in 2015, the oldest manager in baseball to do so, has resigned. And yes, I'm using air quotes.
Yeah, World Series, I got to watch one of my pitchers start an all-star game. It's been a blast, but it's time.
Look, I know Terry Collins mismanaged a lot of his pitchers. He made some very curious moves, and there were some very justifiable reasons for wanting Terry Collins out as manager of this team. But let's not overlook the fact that at age 68, he was the oldest manager in baseball to lead the Mets to the World Series and on an incredible run in 2015. And they wouldn't have done that. They wouldn't have turned around that season so epically the way they did. They wouldn't have done that without Terry Collins at the helm pushing all the right buttons. So let's not lose sight of that. And I think that's why David Wright was so frustrated with some of his teammates for ripping Collins anonymously to reporters down the stretch in the last few weeks of this season. And I think he was right to do so. He called those teammates cowardly because at the end of the day, Terry Collins did so much for this franchise. There's no need to kick the man on the way out the door. You know, I go back to when I was an intern covering baseball and just learning the ropes. Terry Collins was manager of the Anaheim Angels, and I approached him for a story to get some quotes about Tim Salmon that I was working on. And I approached him at absolutely the wrong time. You come to learn as you cover baseball that there are appropriate times to go talk to the managers. And it was a little bit looser back in the the late 90s when I did this. But, Terry Collins could have easily ripped me a new one for coming over to him. And other managers would have. Other players absolutely would have. TC pulled me aside and he said, "Listen, son," in that matter-of-fact, very frank-speaking way that he can. And he explained that now is not the right time, but I'm happy to talk to you if you come back at this time. And he gave me a great interview when I did come back, and I just have never forgotten that. Terry Collins is a class act. He's a teacher, and I hope that at the end of the day, even though this year was so frustrating for the Mets, I hope that we can all step back and appreciate what Terry Collins did for this team and hopefully what he will do working as a special assistant with this front office going forward with this team. He's a baseball man. He's a teacher, and he's got a lot that we can all still learn from. And that'll do it for this first Sports Final podcast. Thanks for joining us, folks. You can subscribe here on iTunes. You can follow me at John Chandler NBC on Twitter. And, of course, check out our Facebook page, my personal Facebook page and NBC New York's Facebook page for updates on when these podcasts will be dropping in the future. We've got a lot to discuss as we get you ready for South Korea and the Winter Olympics. And as always, taking a look at the New York sports scene, it never disappoints. Even when it disappoints. See ya.